Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. The part of Stephen still being played by a human being.
All right. Well, we're still using carbon-based units for the program here.
For the hosts, anyway.
I believe the lady who counts us down before the show starts. Of course, our listeners never get to hear that, but we get a 1 minute warning for each minute leading up to the show, and she tells us, you know, how much time we have left. I'm pretty sure she's not a carbon-based unit.
Either that or she's very busy, I mean, with all the podcasts.
Well, she is. Oh, gosh, with all those shows starting, I don't even know how she keeps it straight. No, I think she's just ours. I think it's just us. We get her. And
yeah,
some other
we're
get
special
somebody else.
That way.
Other people get, like, some guy from the Bronx, you know? Anyway, it's a completely different warning, right?
We just lost our Bronx audience, Phil.
I didn't say anything bad about people from the Bronx. I'm just saying that, you know, if she's British, it would sound very different. That's all.
I respect
people from the Bronx so much that I'm not even going to try to do a Bronx accent. Okay, there. How's
there
that?
You go.
So,
there you go.
I feel like that covers. But we got a lot of AI stuff to talk about here. We've got it's Wednesday. We're back here after a brief hiatus. We've been gone for about 10 days, unplanned summer hiatus due to death in my family. We lost my father, and had to take some time for that. You know, we had just kind of talked about this, Stephen. It's interesting. On one of our amazing Wednesdays, Wednesday before last or the one before that, talking about the urgency for curing cancer, for ending this horrible disease. And one of the things I noted was that, you know, not everyone's going to make it. And
that's right.
Unfortunately, my dad did not. We had kind of seen the handwriting on the wall for that for a while. But it among other things, going through an experience like that just kind of renews one's commitment to talking about these things and to getting these issues out there and to seeing it happen. Because I firmly believe that we will see cancer conquered. And I firmly believe that a lot of the awesome stuff that we talk about in the show are going to happen. And, you know, that's why we keep pushing on. That's why it's great to be back on a Wednesday evening, actually, and talking about a completely different amazing topic, talking about amazing artificial intelligence. So we should just, we got more than we can possibly deal with. Let's just jump into it. So I want to start off with this story that was over on Singularity Hub. The long-promised artificial intelligence is looming, and it's going to be amazing. This is by Vivek Wadhwa. We've talked about some of his stuff on occasion before. I think we dissected one of his videos a couple of years ago, and it seems like he's closely associated with Singularity University. Says some very interesting stuff. This story,
right,
I think, just kind of lays out where we are. He talks about Deep Blue. He talks about machine learning. He says, today's AI uses machine learning in which you give it examples of previous games and let it learn from those examples. The computer's taught what to learn and how to learn and make its own decision. and I'm going to skip a bit, the new programming techniques use neural networks, which are modeled on the human brain, in which information is processed in layers and the connections between these layers are strengthened based on what is learned. This is called deep learning because of the increased number of layers of information that are processed by increasingly faster computers. These are enabling computers to recognize images, voice, and text, and to do human-like things. So I thought, well, he kind of lays out this space pretty well, and we've been talking about this quite a bit on the show, and I'm going to skip to it's not the next article listed in our show notes, but it's kind of the next logical one. This piece by Stephen Levy over on Back Channel, another author that people ought to be familiar with, the author of Hackers and many other great books about the computer world. His piece is How Google is Remaking Itself as a Machine Learning First Company. And I find his tagline here quite attention-getting. He says, if you want to build artificial intelligence into every product, you better retrain your army of coders. Check. And that's exactly what's happening at Google. They right. are, in fact, building artificial intelligence into every product. So when Wadhwa talks about the fact that this long promised age of AI, it's really hitting. Okay, it's happening now. Well, and one of the reasons it's happening is because this technology that's so ubiquitous in our lives, Google is all in with AI.
Well, and you can forgive many people, perhaps in our audience even, that might be a little cynical about this, Bill, because, I mean, this is something that's been promised over and over again. Well, even before I was born, I was born in 69, Phil, and there were people in the late 50s promising it was a decade away, right?
Right.
And Marvin Minsky in 1970 predicted it would be 3 to 8 years that we'd see a machine with general intelligence of that of an average human being. I think the problem was that even the researchers in the middle of all this just did not know how difficult of a task it was they were trying to solve, and.
I think that's
true. They really
had
to get the tools together. They had to build
the
tools.
Yeah, I think they
first.
Didn't know, they didn't understand what level of hardware they needed. And just as importantly, I think they didn't realize how far software algorithms had to go before this would all become possible. They underestimated both of those. And we've talked about that kind of S curve that happens when technology is first overestimated and then subsequently underestimated. I think those who are very skeptical now are down in that trough of underestimating what's going to happen next, because when you point out those historical it's part of the historical record that yes, it was predicted, they said we would have it and it never showed up. Those things happened in a world when we didn't have conversations with Siri every day, right? They happened in a world where a computer hadn't yet even beat a human being at chess, much less Jeopardy, much less Go, right? I mean, these amazing strides that we've seen over the past few years, and some of them now happening faster than anybody expected. Yeah, well, exactly.
Self-driving cars, that's science fiction, man. We're seeing that. Seeing that happen right in front of our eyes. And, I think it comes down to understanding what's going on in a biological brain. We understand a little better what's happening in our neurons. When something happens, anything, we take that in, and it strengthens a particular neuron, a particular set of neurons, and that act together. And so we begin to learn that, 1 + 1 = 2. And the more we see that in the real world working out that way, the stronger that gets. And so until it's second nature. If a particular problem only comes up once in your life, Bill, the neural connection of the solution to that problem won't be very strong. But if it's a problem that we see all the time, by the time we reach middle age, it's second nature. We hardly have to think about it, right? So,
exactly.
And that's what's happening now in these neural nets that are being built. So.
Well, that's exactly right. As they get smarter, they also get redeployed. They get reused in different applications. I mean, the big example of that we've talked about multiple times is Watson. You know, designed to solve initially deployed to use to solve one particular set of problems, but now being applied to a whole range of problems. Especially interesting what's going on in terms of healthcare, as we've discussed with Watson. It's like there's this new substrate of intelligence, and once you have it, you incrementally build on top of that. So the one thing I would say to the skeptics is that you have to remember is that all of the developments we're going to see in AI are going to be on top of and in a world that already assumes everything we just talked about, right? I mean, that's all a given. And now you've got Google working on basically building it into everything they do.
Right.
I mean, our artificial intelligence is already a big piece of what happens with Google, but they're putting machine learning. They're going to be putting this deep learning into search, you know, into mail, into all the you know Google Docs, all the stuff that we do with Google, and we're going to be interacting with it in ways that we haven't up to this point. We'll see the same things with our devices. We'll see the same things with the devices that we don't think of as smart devices, like our cars and our homes. Artificial intelligence, somebody uses the analogy, and I think it's in the Vivek Wadhwa piece, but somebody uses the analogy, it's like a new form of electricity, right? It's like the whole world is about to become electrified in a new way. It's going to get smarter, and we're going to be encountering it in a lot of different contexts.
Well, can
so
I give
many
you
that
one
we won't
context,
even be surprised by it anyway. Yeah, go.
Yeah. And this one particular context just came up this afternoon. My son Matthew asked if we could subscribe to Google Play. And, you know, I said, well, you know, was involved in all that. And it turns out it's you also get YouTube Red or whatever that is with it. So, mm-hmm. you know, you can watch YouTube without ads and all that. So anyway, it looked like a fairly decent deal. So I said, yeah, let's go for it. And the first, you know, when he signed up, the first thing he wanted to do was talk to, you know, what kind of bands do you like? And went through a pretty lengthy interview of Matthew, right? The
right.
system did. And then said, okay, cool. Well, we recommend you listen, you know, you try out these albums, see what you think. And Matthew's like, well, I've never even heard of some of these. And he clicked on one. He goes, oh, my gosh, this is awesome. You know, this system is really good. Well, if you like this, and this, you know, and there's not even a human involved in the loop in these things. You know, it just, you know, bases, you know, people that like these things, based on its long experience, you know, of, you know, millions of cycles, right, is able to tell. That, you know, you're probably going to, you know, you stand a, and it probably could spit out an exact percentage likelihood that you'll like this.
Right.
And,
right.
And so
and
that's how that works. That's how Netflix has been doing something similar with movies. And, you know, it's just it's the way a lot of these services are going. Amazon recommendations for, you know, you'll probably like this. And it's amazing how often they're right. I think I would like to buy that.
You know, and some of that stuff can be implemented at a pretty crude level, at a pretty straightforward level, where they just, you know,
right.
they just look at what other people who liked this liked that, and so they say, hey, you might like this too, based on the fact that other people who like this. But what you're describing there, really interesting, is, you know, building a profile around Matthew, right, saying, well, you know, these are your tastes, these are things that have worked for you, and probably that gets refined significantly as he goes. As good a match as it was initially, it's only going to get better,
yeah.
right? Because he's going to be adding data points by
they're going to build
listening
a database
to some things more
on
than
that.
Once,
yeah,
right.
That's right. The system will go to school on him, and as his tastes change, you know, he grows up. He, you know, it'll adapt to him. And that's, you know, that you're getting very close to a Jarvis-type situation, aren't you, at that point? I'm talking, of course, about the digital assistant that Tony Stark had. And,
exactly.
You know, that's ultimately, I think, where these things are going. We have someone in our life that's not a someone, right? It's not a human person anyway, that knows us sometimes better than we know ourselves and maybe more intimately in some ways than any other human.
Right.
I think that's ultimately where this is going. So,
I think, is that a good thing
or bad thing, Phil?
Oh, well, you know, it's all in how it gets used. I mean, obviously, knowing me better than I know myself is something that can be exploited in any number of ways, commercially and otherwise. You know, you can take advantage of somebody if you know them better than they know themselves. You know, when you talk about a big company having that kind of power, sure, there's a potential dark underbelly to that capability. But if you talk in terms simply of, you know, kind of optimizing your overall life experience, it's awesome. I mean, who wouldn't want Jarvis, right, or Jeeves, right? Who wouldn't want somebody who's got their back, who's looking out for them, who anticipates, you know, not only things that are likely to happen to them, but what they're going to want, what they're not going to like, what they need to avoid, all that kind of stuff. On balance, I think people are you know, we will be way into it before anybody even stops to say, hey, should we even be doing this? Right? I think we'll be too far gone before anybody asks the question.
I think, Phil, then this is just a prediction on my part, that these systems will be first, you know, solely the you know, something that the Googles of this world, the Amazons, the Netflix, you know, people that want to sell you things, basically, will have. Ultimately, we'll each have our own, though, that will perhaps even spend a good portion of its time weeding through, you know, all the Googles and the Netflixes, you know, and say, you know what, Stephen doesn't need to be bombarded today with all this crap. I'm just letting this much through. It's actually doing battle with the systems on my behalf, perhaps, just to make, you know, make my life a little easier, perhaps.
Well, it'll finally come down to the question of who you're working for, buddy, right?
Yeah.
You know, because if Jarvis is really pretending to be my friend, but he's a shill for Google, eventually I'll want to go with somebody who is actually my friend, right? Who isn't going to lead me down the path. So I think that might be the, you know, as they become that sophisticated and they become that real, people will opt for, you know, at least smart people will opt for something that truly is looking out for their interests rather than being a shill. Not that Google will necessarily make, you know, I don't mean to heap these accusations on Google or Apple or any of them, other than the fact that they've kind of earned it through their past behavior. But ultimately, I think if it's true intelligence, you know, you get a feeling for, you know, just like people that you know, you get a feeling for whether they've got your back or they don't. I think we'll kind of get that feeling from our technology, and we will choose accordingly. But let's move on. We've got 10 stats about artificial intelligence that will blow you away. Bill Gates calls this market the holy grail of computer science. And I thought, Stephen, this would be a fun list to work through rather quickly, and we can – as experts on what's amazing and what isn't, because we talk about it every Wednesday, we can assess what's amazing and what's not here in this list. Okay, so let's begin. A $5.05 billion market for AI by 2020. Research firm Markets and Markets estimates that the AI market will grow from $420 million in 2014 to $5.05 billion by 2020. Just because of the rising adoption of machine learning. I think that's impressive. I don't know. Is it amazing? I'm not sure.
No, it doesn't quite get to amazing for me because, I mean, $5.05 billion is a lot of money, Phil. I mean, but that's for the entire AI market by 2020. You know, that doesn't blow me away.
It doesn't blow me away. I think it's impressive to see that the market's going to be moving along that quickly, and to think it will take on that size. That's good. Okay, number two, 6 billion devices will request AI support. This is a Gartner projection, actually. Gartner estimates that 6 billion connected things will be actively requesting support from AI platforms by 2018. These devices will likely include many connected appliances, cars, wearables, and other gadgets included in the broader Internet of Things market. One of the things that's interesting about this, and I don't know if the estimate comes from Gartner or not, but I think they have estimated, what is it? It's a big number, like 20 billion connected, maybe 100 billion connected things in the Internet of Things by about the year 2020. So if 6 billion of those are going to be actively looking, you know, for support from AI platforms within, you know, within that time frame, even before the Internet of Things hits its full kind of, you know, stride, then that is, I think, pretty amazing. I mean, think about that. There's
this is amazing.
People in the world.
Right. I was about to say, if we get 6 billion connected things by 2018, I would think that by 2019, we've got more smart things in this world than we have people in this world.
Right.
That's
they won't be as smart as people, clearly. But,
no, not yet. It's almost as if much of the world around us will begin to wake up, though. And that's pretty amazing.
I think that is amazing. Almost a little scary. Exciting too, to think that there will be that much intelligence.
Yeah, not just a little scary. I mean, I think we will have a lot of security issues involved in all this that, I think it'll take a while to settle out, you know?
And in fact, there are a lot of issues just around the Internet of Things related to security and privacy that have to be worked out. And when you build intelligence into that equation, it just kind of multiplies the benefit, you know, and the risk as well, right? I mean, both of those things come into play in a more complete way because of the fact that that the system gets smarter. So yeah, I think you're right. I think security and privacy concerns are going to come to a head right around the same time. You know, I don't know if there was a projection around
that. As a society, we willingly gave up a whole lot of privacy just by adopting smartphones, didn't we? I mean, we're all lowjacked now, Phil. And you know, if someone, it could be someone within the government, it could be someone within a large corporation. If they were very interested in where Stephen Gordon was at this moment, they could easily find out. There's that technology now, and we willingly accepted that loss of privacy because of what the upside of the technology. Will we do the same thing with Internet of Things? I think it'll be a case by case basis for a while. You know, we'll see. Now, do I really need a smart toaster that bad?
We will become more aware of the issue. And I think we're going to become more aware of the LoJack issues, too. I mean, most people, it's like, well, they think, well, I'm an open book. You know, I'm out in public anyway. It doesn't really matter where I am. They could follow me around to find out, you know, if they wanted to know anyway. And I think they really don't see the implications, right, of having somebody track their potentially track their every move. But let's move on. Here we go. $5.4 billion invested in AI startups. Okay, this is interesting when you compare it to number one, right? So – there's $5.4 billion invested in a market that is only going to make it to $5.05 billion by 2020. So you know what? You got to think long term, I guess, if you're putting money into AI. It's not like you're going to double your money next week or anything like that.
Angel investors particularly tend to look at about a five-year payback, right? Maybe they'll get it. Maybe they'll get it. So I hope it's not a dot-com issue where, you know, it was such exuberance at the beginning of it that, and then of course came a collapse, and it only slowly built back when, you know, people began to look at things realistically. And it could be, we could have the little booms and busts like that as this comes online. We'll see.
Well, when you got more money going into a market than is projected to come out in 4 years, it says something. So we'll see. Very, very interesting.
Yeah.
Amazing? I hardly think so. Okay, how about this one? 80% of executives believe AI boosts productivity. Not amazing. Interesting that it's that high of a number, though. I would have expected that they would have been a lot more skeptical about that. To think that bosses are that on board maybe tells you that business is pretty much on board with replacing people with AIs as soon as they get the opportunity. I don't know. Is that too cynical a reading?
They will. No, I don't think that's cynical at all. I think that's exactly the truth. And it'll go from 80% to 100% inside of 2 or 3 years, Phil. I mean, something close to 100%. I'm not particularly amazed at the 80%. I'm kind of with you. I would have thought it would be more like 50% at this point, but I suspect it'll go up real quick from 80 to something close to 100. Okay, number five, most mobile users use voice assistants. Well, do you, Phil? Do you use some sort of voice assistant on your smartphone?
All the time. I would be amazed if it said most mobile users don't, frankly.
Yeah.
I would find that astounding. You have this thing and it's available, you use it, right? I'm not amazed by that. I think that is a very telling piece of information about the times we live in, but a completely expected one from where I sit. I'm not at all surprised. I mean, you use it, right, Stephen?
All the time.
Yeah.
I was walking in the office the other day, and I said, call my wife. And my secretary said, what? I said, I wasn't talking to you.
There you go. I was talking to her replacement here. Get to know her. Her name's Siri. Yeah.
Well, I do. I use it all the time in the car, you know, so I don't take my eyes off the road, right? I just reach down, touch that button, call my wife, or call Timothy or whatever, and text Timothy this. Now, you don't want to read going down the road, and you don't want to look down to dial a number or anything, but that you can do fairly, safer. I'm not advocating it, but it has to be safer than taking your eyes away from the road. And so if it makes phones safer, then that's probably a good thing too.
How about number six? Virtual assistants will make decisions for you. Now that goes even beyond what we were just talking about, doesn't it? We were talking
right.
about the assistant who knows you so well that they step in and they help you out. But how about actually making the decision on your behalf?
Stuff starts coming in from Amazon that I didn't even order, and I realize, I kind of really did need that. that's when it kind of gets spooky, doesn't it, Phil?
That's spooky, but you know what? When that happens, if I get a package and I'm really glad it showed up and I never once thought about it, that will truly be amazing. Okay, you want to talk about amazing AI. That will be the gold standard of amazing. It'll be like, thank you. Thank you, AI, for knowing me better than I know myself and doing something useful for me.
Package for Bugs Bunny, just in time.
Yeah.
I mean, it just shows it just shows up when you need it. That's awesome. Yeah,
this is an interesting one.
But a lot of people won't like that, though. I mean, if these virtual assistants are making decisions that people formerly made themselves, even if they made worse decisions, there'll be some resistance to that, I think.
I assume this will be something you can opt into, that you will allow to happen.
Yeah.
Right. The idea that it just starts happening. Yeah, that does sound pretty dicey. How about this? Most enterprise relationships with customers won't require humans by 2020. Well, on the consumer side, we're used to that anyway, right? I order stuff off Amazon. I do so many things that don't require any human interaction. But this saying enterprise relationships, so business to business. Businesses managing their big enterprise accounts and no people in the loop, call centers basically disappearing. That's interesting. It says it bodes well for Facebook's recent integration of chatbots. But again, amazing? No. I'm surprised there still are call centers, to tell you the truth, with people. I haven't spoken to one lately. Have you?
No, I haven't really.
The only ones you hear from are the telemarketers. Okay, number eight, AI will replace 16% of jobs over the next decade. I'm amazed that it's that low, frankly. What do you think?
I think that's way low. I think over the next decade, we will see a drop of 50% of jobs.
Whoa.
And in 15 years, it'll be much worse.
If you look at number nine, Gartner estimates that 45% of the fastest growing companies in the world will employ more smart machines and virtual assistants than people by 2018. So you're going in one better by 5%. That's impressive.
Yeah.
Finally, number 10, AI is powered by GPUs, not CPUs. That would be amazing if you hadn't heard it here first on The World Transformed. We talked about that, the big GPU revolution, I don't know, 6 months ago, right? So
right.
If you want to keep up with the amazing stuff that's happening, folks, you just got to listen to this program, and then you'll know what's
We are on the cutting edge, I tell you.
Exactly. We're almost out of time, but how about this intelligent robot that remembers and learns could be scrapped after escaping a lab for a second time? Stephen, I don't think we're going to have time to give this one justice, but the bottom line
no,
is...
No, but, you know, my heart goes out to this robot. I mean, it's just doing what it was, you know, made to do. It learns that, hey, you know, if I go out this door, I can have a big adventure as opposed to, you know, just playing around in this one little room. It's, you know... it's doing what it's following its programming. So anyway, perhaps they need to move their facility out of a heavily populated city and go someplace where it can, you know, go out in the woods or something, you know,
They grow up so fast. That's all I can say about robots. They grow up so fast. And this is actually very encouraging that they're taking steps to prevent robots from taking steps that they shouldn't be taking. Okay, well, there it is. That's it in a nutshell. Some amazing stuff happening and more amazing stuff to come. We'll be back every Wednesday to talk about amazing things, and we'll be back again on Friday with another all-new program. Stephen, look forward to talking with you then. Thank you all for being with us, and until next time, live to see it.